Linux Out Loud is firing up our mics, connecting those headphones as we search the community for themes to expand upon. We keep the banter friendly and the conversation, well, somewhat on topic, and have fun doing it. This week, we are spouting off about what we look for in building a PC. Let's get into episodes 86.
Sorry,
Nate. Never mind.
I can't help it. I'm having fun.
Yay!
And precisely that's the problem.
Adult, you know what?
So from a kid's perspective, adults are not allowed to have fun.
Sure, they are. Who says that?
No. Because our fun impedes their fun.
No.
It depends on the kid.
And the parent. Or the adult. Yes. Listen.
I have stopped some of my children from doing really stupid things that they thought was going to be fun. Yeah, that's happened.
You know, that would probably be the advantage of having like a mom in the house. But like when it's me and my kids and they go to do something, I'm like, yeah, do it. So maybe. Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry. Are you saying moms are the conscience of like halfway making good decisions on that one?
I think they have a greater potential of that. I mean, if my kids can do something like crazy, like with a chainsaw, I'll probably not let them do that. Or like
probably not.
You know. But like, you know, if they're gonna do, you know, some things on the trampoline or jumping off one thing onto the trampoline, I may or may not stop that. So it's, you know, it depends. I'll do a rapid risk assessment before I say so. Sometimes my rapid risk assessment is not correct.
Another way to say the rapid risk assessment is how many bones are you going to break and does it require an emergency trip to the hospital?
And that's one thing I try to avoid, but I do have good insurance right now.
Right.
Touché. And as you can tell, we totally do not stay on topic at all on this show.
Even from the beginning, yeah.
Even from the beginning. Divi, get to the intro of the actual people. So, obviously, we have with me my wonderful co-host, Wendy, and then there's Nate.
That's right. Of the cubicle variety.
Oh, I mean, nope. This is the low-hanging fruit there. I'm just going to leave. I mean,
not going to touch 90. That one.
Nope. So, Nate, speaking of local things and whatnot, you know, like you are locally you, what have you been messing around with?
That was a horrible transition, but you got there.
You got stuck in the paper bag and couldn't quite get out of it.
I couldn't get out.
I got nothing today. Like, I'm so burned.
You're here. Yes, you're here, you and that's as good as it gets. Yeah.
Usually, I'd have a witty retort in between there. I ain't got nothing right now. Okay. So, Nate. Okay. Anyway, what program have you been messing around with?
So, what I've been messing around with lately is something called LocalSend. It's a way to easily share files between nearby devices. Now, I've actually heard this thing talked about before. And I'm sure you're aware of the Apple Drop or AirDrop thing from Apple. I think Apple Drop better. They should just call it Apple Drop. Woo! Kind of like Mic Drop. Anyway, so apparently AirDrop only does pictures, doesn't do more than that. Anyway, that aside, LocalSend is an open source application, of course, that allows you to share files with on devices on a local area network. So like if I want to like send... just like a one-off file, let's say like a even a large like 2 gigabyte, you know, movie rip or whatever of you know, The Nutty Professor or something like that from one computer to another. Not saying that this actually happened, but I can do that very easily with LocalSend, and it's, you know, it's pretty quick and efficient because it's a direct, and it has a really really nice interface to be able to do all these things. So I mean, the fact of the matter is, in my orbit of machines, there are non-Linux devices. Not sure if you're aware of that, right. But there are. And so LocalSend is also cross-platform. So I can send, this will work for all the almost all the major platforms. So you have Linux, Windows, Mac OS, Android, iOS. There is no Amiga or Commodore 64, so there is some lack there. But outside of that, you can send it to any of those. anyway, so they have a Flatpak or App Image, you know, whatever you want. And unless you're running, it's in the AUR. There's a NixWave installing it, and then you also have a Deb. Nice. And if you need to, if you want none of those, you want to build from the tar, you can go ahead and do that as well. It's once it's running, it's actually very easy. You just got to do some punch a couple holes in your firewall, port 5 something. I don't know. It's in an article I wrote on cubiclenate.com.
Perfect.
Port 53317 TCP and UDP. So those two ports got to open up there. And it has a lot of features. So it's not just it's not just sending files. You can send an entire folder of things. You can actually send a text message essentially as well. Or if something from your paste, from your paste bin, is it called paste bin? Clipboard, whatever. From your clipboard, you can send that as well. So if you just want to, if you've copied something like an image from your screen, you can actually just put it right in there as well, which I think is pretty cool. And they have some other, like, you know, more advanced files or features as well. But those are the basic features there. It works really well, really quite reliable. And what I've done with it, I've taken it one level further, and I basically made it kind of using LocalSend, and then combining it with TailScale. I can now actually, it's a local send, but also kind of a global local send, if that makes any sense, because I can use LocalSend to send things, whatever. And so that's really going to be handy. Like when I'm traveling and I got to send something to my kids or back and forth, that'd be really handy for sending files back and forth. So can bypass the whole email thing, you know, using TailScale. So anyway, it's really neat how easy it is to set up, get going, to utilize. It's all very straightforward. You basically don't need an article to talk about it because it's that straightforward. And there's just so many things I really like about it. I like the fact they have these automatic assignment of silly names. So they don't actually use your host name, but they just use some silly name. You know, you can change it to whatever you want, but I just think it's amusing. So, you know, things like beautiful orange, clean tomato, fantastic pineapple are a couple examples that from things that just, so it's, I guess, adjective, noun. It's kind of what they do, but like a fruit. And to me, it's just a funny, whimsical thing that they did with it, which really harkens back to like open source software from 20 years ago when it was all kind of new and fresh and unprofessional. So this is a very professional application, but they have just a little bit of a smile that they just kind of threw right in there. And I really appreciate that. And it's built with Flutter, so it's portable, you know. And anyway, so that's it. I think it's really cool. It's a neat application. We're going to be talking about it on Linux Saloon this Saturday, which will be past Saturday when we kick this one out to everybody. But that's actually the impetus of why I decided to try it out. Was it was being talked about on Linux Saloon, like, you should try that. And so here we are.
So Nate, this reminds me of could be just a web app. This if you're somewhat familiar with like what OBS Ninja used to do, it was that open source kind of plug-in web based plugin that kind of conglomerated sources in OBS. There's an open source alternative that is just simply a web address. It's kind of like Wormhole almost.
Okay.
It is called, I believe it's called snapdrop.net.
Okay.
That does very something similar.
All right.
But
it, just through the web, interface.
Yep. And it's literally, it shows all the devices in the network. You can send files to those devices in the network from the web page, and send messages and all that kind of stuff. So also something to maybe look at if you're just looking for like a quick in out solution for a network as well. So, but they're super convenient. Not going to lie. I use them all the time, like Snapdrop or LocalSend or any of those kind of like NitroShare or anything like that is super, super convenient.
Well, Wormhole, when it comes to using a web client, Wormhole is my favorite just because of the little effect thing that they do. And that's your really Star all Trek. Takes. Yeah, yeah. It's Star Trek is strong with this one. So But anyway, so I guess if you're interested in that, check it out. I'm also going to check out your, what'd you call it? Snapdragon? No, Snapdrop.
Snapdrop.
Snapdrop.net.
Should probably put that in the show notes so I can refer to it later, like this weekend on Linuxlin. There we go. Look at that, you anonymous iguana.
I will say you will also like the fact that Snapdrop does use funny little nicknames for your devices and stuff.
Oh, good.
Like how currently, I'm just my phone is known as Violet Yak.
Wow. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Very interesting.
In fact, I would say you are kind of a Violet Yak. Yakety Yak.
It's missing it's missing a letter.
Okay.
Violent.
Oh. Then it's probably something that I would say a violent yank.
Only if you were British.
Well, there we go. Yeah. Well, speaking anyway. Of British, Wendy, it sounds like there was some bad audio, I guess, in the last episode. I thought it was fine. Oh, it was the audio only apparently had like.
Right.
You had me muted or
that's
something.
Where so we ran into issues.
So Matt requested that.
Well, and it was not only you. It was also Matt at times.
Oh,
so okay. Edit the show, right? I export the files, the audio only files from DaVinci, and then I run them through Alphonic. And Alphonic is great for the fact that it puts all of the timestamps in there. So when it goes to Fireside, that stuff's already done. I don't have to manually enter that in. What? And a couple other things. It makes it quite nice for that kind of stuff. Well, I have been using this feature for quite a while, but it also has options on it where you can have it cut silences and you can have it remove ums. And I've been doing that for the last, I don't know, at least 4 or 5 episodes. And I haven't had a problem with it. And so I ran it this time. So I do the first one where it's the version that will go out on the video version of the show. And then I run it again with those extra add-ons on it that removes the ums and the spaces. Because there are pauses that I want to leave in the video show because it makes sense with our facial expressions or something that's going on, right? It adds to the overall feel of the podcast. But if you're not seeing us and you're not able to watch our interactions, it just seems like a blank spot inside the show. So I'd uploaded everything, thought it was all good. And I first got a response on Mastodon that was like, hey, I can hear you and somebody else talking, but it seems like you're talking to a ghost. And I went back and did it quick. And I'm like, I hear me, I hear Matt, I hear Nate. No, like everybody's there and just random clicks throughout the show. And it sounded like everything was fine. And so, you know, was like, yeah, you know, maybe they're listening to one of the previous shows where Matt wasn't there, whatever. And I'd kind of left it at that. And then on the YouTube version of the show, somebody else was like, hey, I was listening to the audio only version and had to come here because that is missing people talking. So I was like, okay, all right. So we've got at least 2 confirmed versions of this happening. And I haven't went and listened all the way through the show, but I ended up uploading the video version of the audio on Fireside. And it didn't actually ever repopulate. So I had to go in and remove the original version of Linux Out Loud 86 and put it up for a second time. So all of that's fixed. If you listened to 85 when it was originally posted in audio only and found that there was us missing, you can now listen to that full show. And it's a long one. That one is an almost 2-hour show. I think one of the longest shows that we've ever done. I thought about breaking it up into 2 different parts, but I just didn't see a really clean way to break it up and then pick it up again the next time. So you got
all of
it. It
was a fun one.
It definitely was a fun one.
Of all the shows we did, that was my most favorite listen back. Also
of through them. Yeah. Cause it was fun for us to do. we've gotten some feedback so far of listeners who enjoyed that. So it'll be something that we are picking up again, without a doubt. But all the audio is fixed before 86, the one we're recording right now, goes out. I will make sure that that's good, so we won't have one of those issues again. So if you do want to pick up 86, you can either watch it on YouTube or Rumble. I think it's also on Odyssey. I think Odyssey pulls it directly from the YouTube source. I manually upload it to Rumble, so it's only the video versions of the podcast that we've done that you can find there. Or if you want to listen to audio only, the full show without any of us missing should be up and ready to go.
Wendy, it sounds like Aphonic decided to do what I constantly suggest and just kind of mute Nate totally, and I'm okay with that.
It not only muted Nate, sometimes it muted you, so it cut you both out of the show.
And I'm okay with that, too.
So what you're saying is...
It sounds like the only one that it left was me. I don't know why.
So apparently our AI overlord is saying that you are the important aspect of the show.
Apparently, I don't know. Yeah.
No, I just want to get the children out of the room so the adults could talk.
See, Nate's never the adult here. I'm only sometimes an adult. And Wendy's the only adult.
It depends. On the show, yes. On the show, not so much.
And yes, Aphonic is a great tool. I hadn't messed around with the kind of the AI stuff that they've been integrating in. But it, as far as like the leveling and all that stuff, it is fantastic for a lot of the leveling of sources and all that stuff that you normally would. You've done the audio. It takes forever.
Well, and I can do that manually because I used to do it manually on Audacity and then Tenacity. And I know now how to do that manually inside of DaVinci. One of the biggest reasons why I still use it for this show in particular is because I like the fact that it auto puts those chapters in for me. It does all of that. And that's one thing that I haven't been able to do in DaVinci is to have it. Yes, I can tell it to export them, but then when I'm pulling them into other things, other media players, I'm not actually seeing them in there. So that's one of the biggest reasons why I use it. I actually already do some audio tweaking in DaVinci before it even gets exported and out to Aphonic, but it is nice. That was a mess up. I did get my credits back for that. I did report it. They did want to know where those mess ups were, where you guys were cut sporadic. And you shouldn't have been cut. And I haven't had time to go back and listen to that and actually give them some timestamps between the two. But
so wait. You're saying they actually provided good customer service too?
They did. And this is the second time that I've had a mess up. A different one before, but this is the second time that I've had a mess up. And I'm like, hey, I've had a problem and requested the credits back. And they've always gotten to me back really quickly. And, you know, they have had amazing customer service so far. So as far as using a service, they've been good. They've been good. In not using a service, that was Utah State. So if you did watch the video version of episode 85, then you did get to see a full robot run. I absolutely love what Utah State did. They filmed it from the top down. So on all of the stuff that went out to people that were watching it, their stream that's still up on YouTube, all of that was done from the top down. So you can see the robots moving really nicely across the field. And then the end up scores and all of that. And the kids did amazing. They absolutely did awesome. They did great during their speeches. They had awesome scores back from the judges on what their engineering portfolio looked like. And they had a very, very awesome robot game. I don't remember if I talked about it last episode or not, but my daughter was building in CAD, thank you to Onshape, was building in CAD a piece for their robot to fly through. So it stabilized the robot and helped it go straight when it went out of the launcher. The print went fine. She only had to do one revision to make it just a little bit shorter. Otherwise, it turned out fantastic for her first item built in CAD, and it ended up working so well in helping the robot fly that they had to reduce the tension on the rubber band that was launching the plane, because now it was launching it way too far than it was supposed to be. It turned out great. So it was an awesome moment for her to actually see something that she took from an idea, built in CAD, had printed, put on the robot, and saw it work. Like, that full cycle turned out really, really cool. So overall, it was a great experience, even though, no, we could not go to Worlds from there. I know I had someone asked again, you know, you went, so does that mean you can get a ticket to Worlds? And no, we can't get a ticket to Worlds from there, only from our home state of Idaho. It used to be that you could get it from multiple states, but there have been some changes in recent years. And so it was just good experience for the kids in general in order to figure that out. And they were more prepared for Utah State, which it was a month later, than they were for Idaho State. So if they had been as prepared as they were for Utah State as they had been for Idaho State, I think the award that they got out of Idaho would have been a higher award. But it just is what it is. You know, that's what happens when you start in November, when the season actually started in August. And then where they were doing two different robot teams at the same time, not putting all of their energy into FTC until January. So really, they had from like mid-January to whatever, like mid-February is where 100% of stuff was going into their FTC robot. So overall, I think they did great. They ended the season solidly, and I can't wait to see what they do next year.
Well, that's pretty cool. I think it's unfortunate that you can't make it to state, you know, from another location, but I guess I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does make sense. It helps the teams that aren't allowed to travel. It is expensive to travel. It's one of the things that I'm trying to figure out how we're going to make it work next year. When the kids help with robotics camp, they're essentially getting paid like an hourly wage in trip credits for that time that they are putting into the robotic summer camps. So that helps pay for the car rentals, the house rentals, all of that stuff, but it doesn't help pay for food. And with two kids as part of it and eating out for, what is it? At least so Friday, lunch and dinner, Saturday, three meals, and then Sunday, breakfast and possibly lunch, like that gets expensive really, really quick. So for especially two lately. Kids, and if I'm traveling with them, yeah, one teenage boy, a potentially an adult too, that adds up. So I'm trying to figure out how we're going to make that work for next year with all of the extra travel that they're going to do, but it's worth it for the experience that they get in that travel. So we'll just have to see how it goes. It was fun overall. It was a fun time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really did like the overhead camera view of it all. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't understand like the it isn't like had like toll gates, like a one way, can only go one way through some of the
so it's obstacles a stage like door. So if you go under the one way, it'll lift up, but mm-hmm. it won't lift up when you come back through. So right. if you're too tall, you have to come back through a different way. Their robot was perfect size that they could go through that, what they're calling the stage door or under any of the trusses. Like I said, last week, one thing they did was narrow down their chassis for their robot, and that made mm-hmm. them much faster. They were able to go better through in between the trusses. And it did. It sped them up quite a bit. It was an awesome change that they made to their robot. So.
Yeah. Well, that's, I guess the real question is how much do the kids learn from the experience, and ultimately that's really what matters, I think.
Yeah. And I think they learned a lot. And like I said, it was a positive experience for my daughter to go from an idea all the way through to a working device through CAD. I know that's one thing I want them to work on over the course of this summer, get more comfortable in CAD, go through the robotics course, the first robotics course that Onshape has. And so they're not only building out parts, but they can completely build out their robot on on shape before they ever go to building it. So being able to see how those parts fit together, what do we need? It's a great way if they want parts bought in order to show the mentors, this is what these parts are for. This is how they're going to get used. And it makes it a lot easier to be like, okay, we can work that out in the team budget instead of just throwing parts at things. So that's pretty nice. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Fantastic. Then I guess, when does the season come to a close? I'm not dragging this on, but I'm curious. When does the season actually come to a close then?
The season officially ends after Worlds, and that is typically mid-April in Houston, Texas. So when that's coming up, we won't be traveling with them, but I will be letting you know when those are live, when the Tesla coils are running. And if you would love to help the Tesla coils go, which my two kids will be on that team next year, hopefully they'll be taking me to Texas next year. If you would like to help them with funding, they've really, really been struggling with funding for Worlds this year. They do have a GoFundMe, and they would be more than happy to take your donation in helping to get them to Worlds. One of their largest donors that they've had for like 12 years, they sold their business, and the new owners aren't doing that pitching that they've gotten in years past. And so it's a big chunk of money that they're missing and just struggling in general this year to get some of those funds. So if you would love to help out, I will drop a link in the description and you can help out the Tesla coils in their journey to Worlds. And then, like I said, I'll absolutely share when their robot runs are happening and the game again. Watching the game is so much more fun if you understand the rules of the game and exactly what they're doing. So I'll share both down below.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, we know if there's a game involved in rules, Nate's not going to understand.
Nate's not opposed to rules.
Yeah, there's a chance I might kind of sort of understand it. I mean, there's a possibility. Don't totally write me off, even if it is warranted.
Well, my kids are done playing with hardware for competition. You are playing with new hardware, Matt, on your microphone.
I am. So for those that don't know, I've been using just a regular standard USB condenser mic, which is basically any streamer microphone for the last probably 15 years minimum, basically. Yep. Blue Yeti was kind of the first big, like, normal USB condenser mic for most people.
Is a condenser mic anything like condensed milk?
Sure, Nate, sure.
Okay. Then I'm on board with what you're saying.
So as I totally mentioned, Nate totally misses the boat all the time. Here's the point. Nate's somewhere down here. The point goes over his head like usual. I ended up picking up a XLR USB mixer. So I had an XLR mic for a 15 channel mixer board that I have that I was given to review a while ago that is definitely overkill for what I need. So I already had the mic, so whatever. This is the, I want to say it's called the FiFine Gaming Audio Mixer. There's some numbers and letters and typical OEM stuff that goes with it.
Crappy name, but yeah.
Yeah. So the nice thing about this is trying to find a USB mixer that has phantom power via USB. Now, I don't have to plug this into an external wall source or anything. This is all through USB-C. So this has 48 volt phantom power.
Through USB-C?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. So that's why I was totally sold on a part of it, because I didn't have an extra wall spot to give for another AC adapter.
Right.
Be green and call me Geeko, I guess. That's crazy.
So this has four different individual sliders for your audio controls, and each one you can individually mute. So you have your line in, your XLR, or I think it's quarter inch jack, whatever the bigger microphone jack is.
Yeah.
That also goes into the S. You have a, yeah, thank you. You have the line in, you have
was that out loud?
Headphone.
That's supposed to be internal monologue.
It was out loud, yes.
Dang it, I hate it when that happens. Loud. Was it Linux?
You also have a, as in, sure. You have a mic monitor, so you have for your headphones that, and you have a just your general audio that you can pipe through it. Each one of those you can mute individually, which is just a mute key. It, Wendy, unfortunately for you, it has the rainbow vomit, so probably not your not your.
No, she likes that actually. But, she changed her mind.
No, she changed her mind. For room lighting, it's useful.
For room lighting, it can be useful because I can adjust the color temperature of lights, and I have explained, but shown off my rainbow vomit that I use on lighting. But other than the one back here is accents, the rest of them are white.
So the one thing that was kind of cool about this. You can use your vomit on
your computer for accenting too, you know.
So the one thing that I did like about this is besides the individual gain levels and all that stuff you can set, it has like, you know, cheap soundboard stuff like voice changers and all that kind of stuff. And whatever that, and even has one where you can do auto tune from the device. So like you
sing something. Oh, could be like Justin. No. Matt, Justin Bieber, Matt Bieber.
Matt
I'm
Bieber.
Excited. Yeah, no. Matt Bieber.
Actually, Nate, if you're going to be accurate, more of the auto tune stuff would be TI and stuff. Like if you're going to go for references, I know that's probably too new for you, but
Justin Bieber's too new for me.
Anything past 1990 is too new for you. But the one thing that was also cool about this is you can set up to four individual sounds or recordings, whatever you want them to be, on the device itself. So
nice.
That is something. So you can create like quick custom soundboards that you want on the device. So works on every. Here's the thing: works on everything. So it's worked on Linux, worked on Garuda, it worked on Mac, which I was kind of surprised about because Mac is usually a little weird, and it worked on Windows. No drivers on any three were needed.
Nice. That's awesome.
So you have to now explain yourself. How do you actually get the sound file onto the board to the right key?
So there's an input for the audio, line in.
Okay.
If you have a MP3 player or whatever, you literally just hold down custom A, play the sound you want.
Okay.
And it records it locally. So then you just hit custom A and that's the sound that plays.
Okay. Nice.
Or,
that makes sense.
Or if you want to do like some saying that you have or whatever, literally just take the microphone conversation. So you just hold custom A or custom B or custom whatever and hold it down for 3 seconds, give or take, and then release it after you said what you wanted to and just hit the button anytime you want to repeat it.
Unfortunately, we can't see Matt's hands, so we don't know if he's saving clips of this show.
No, because right now it would not. I do not have the audio from the machine piped in through this.
Okay, so we're safe for now.
You guys are safe. Anything I say, however,
could be put on loop.
But that's not really safe anyway. So,
though, in fairness, after the last edit of the episode that I just recently watched, Nate, I could almost say you're not all that family friendly either.
That was a deceptive edit. Fake news.
But yeah. So anyway, this mixer runs about $50. Now, trying to find a mixer that is USB-C powered, does not require external power sources, has custom features and functions, is XLR to USB, plug and play, no drivers needed, and works on everything. Because literally this will just show up as in Linux anyway, specifically, it shows up as input and output because.
Okay.
Right. It's both. Got both. Yeah.
But it shows up as, let's see if I actually remember what it shows up as. It shows up as Fifine SC3 Analog Studio in your stuff. So like literally everything's there. Change your audio source. There you go. Problem solved. Works fantastic for things like Plasma because I can just, especially since Plasma changed how they select microphones and audio sources and all that stuff in the desktop now. Fantastic. I love the device. Gives me a little more control at a hardware level with like mutes and that kind of stuff. So that way when there's less external noise and stuff, just when things go awry or, you know, no clicky clack with the keyboard and no trying to remember what application you're in when you have to mute something or whatever. And because Plasma's overall mute button software wise sometimes gets a little finicky when you tell it to not use it.
I think that sounds like an awesome device.
It is.
Hearing you to talk about it in such a positive way, well, I'm gonna wait a couple more weeks, I think. But if you are still talking as positive as you are today in the future about it, I think that might be in my future as well. So this is a Fifine USB microphone that I'm using, and it's, I don't know, I don't really remember what it is, like the ins and outs. But I've thought about going the XLR route because there's a lot more options when you do that. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking at different, boards and everything else, but the fact that this will do, be powered right off the USB-C, that opens up a lot of possibilities. I don't know. And it might be a great entry point into maybe getting more professional with my audio. I know me and professional, it's not really a thing, but there's that potential, that hope that I could possibly do something slightly less amateurish. And that would be, that might be a step in the right direction. It would force me to be something maybe.
In fairness, the only person that probably does anything remotely professional here is probably Wendy because she uses DaVinci Resolve.
Right.
The rest of us, not so much.
I have been using XLR since the early days of Hardware Addicts. I think from the beginning, actually, of Hardware Addicts. I think our test show was done with a USB mic. And then after that, I went XLR for that show in general. And I know I would love to upgrade my microphone. So I'm getting crisper, clearer, better sounds, better voice tones out of it. It's just not something that's been at the top of the list. Like, it's on the wish list. It's just not at the top of the wish list, and things kind of keep bumping it down. Mm-hmm. But I do really enjoy my XLR microphone. I've actually picked it up with the one little Behringer box that I have, and I've taken it to robotics, and I've had the kids at robotics use it for different things. So that's cool. It is pretty handy, and it would be nice to have that. It looks like this one does have phantom power as well, which is nice. So if you do have a XLR microphone that does need that, this is able to make that work. So overall, it seems like a pretty awesome little device. I had something like this. I can't remember what brand it was, but my husband got it for me, I think, last year for Christmas, 2022 Christmas, and mine didn't last that long. I think I made it 2 months, 3 months before it completely died on me. So hopefully this one works better for you. It's got a longer life for you than the one that I had tried. Maybe I just gotten a lemon and the rest of them are pretty good. But overall, it seems like a pretty interesting little device.
It sounds like it. I mean, just the fact that I looked at the link you sent me, and I was real close to buying it with a microphone. I'm like, I got to meet those financial goals first. I'm not going to let you talk me into buying something else. By the way, here's the Pine Buds Pro that you talked me into buying last time.
I am now not the only one that has bought something. Why we've been in the middle of recording, because Nate mm-hmm. bought those legitly while we were recording the last episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
That he did.
So
now I just got to get Wendy to do it.
We'll see. It might end up happening one of these days.
So anyway, it's very compelling. I'm not exactly sure where I'd put it right now. Like the thing I kind of want to maybe put it, as far as where in my studio, my cubicle studio, it would go. But it'll go somewhere. Maybe here.
Yeah, the thing that kind of gave me a kick in the pants, though, was literally, it's $50 right now, and I bought it, and then it ended up going down to like 40 something, and I was like, of course. But even at 50, even I think if you want to get into the see, for me, what it boils down to with XLR specifically is the fact that the cables are much more abundant, because a lot of the USB mics, they're either attached directly to the USB, like you can't take them off the actual mic, or some of them are proprietary connectors to the mic. Mm-hmm. And that is super annoying, especially once they start wearing down and all the other stuff. And so I was just like, I'm just not going to deal with it anymore, especially when my mic was going that route with the cord.
Right.
These are, you know, spend, what, $10, $15 on a XLR cable. And hey, look, that's it.
Right. And I think the one that I have right now and use all the time, I can't remember how much it was because it's been a while since I bought it, but it's even a braided cable. So I know that it helps hold up to all of the moving around I've done on my desk when I'm packing it back and forth for robotics. Like it gets the crap used out of it, and it's held up really pretty well.
All the more reason to go XLR, Nate. Just saying.
Right.
I mean, I'm already sold. I don't.
He want needs to spend some money. Time.
No,
to
no,
make it happen.
He needs to be totally irresponsible. less adulting, more fun.
You see, that's very easy for me to do. The issue is, I need to be the next 6 weeks or so. I have to be very tight on my budget. Just the next 6 weeks to meet a specific goal. And then
he's good.
Then I'm good. Then I can start loosening up just a little bit, but I have to, there's some reasons for it.
Nate, don't be Michael Cheap.
I might be cheaper than him actually. Maybe.
I mean, you are still actively using Amiga OS. So yes.
No, not for anything real practical.
Just for fun.
Wendy, so he tells us.
I think if he actually could do his job from it, he absolutely would.
Oh, he totally would.
It's just not possible at this point.
It's not. I mean, there's, practical. I think with enough will, I think I could probably do it, but I don't think I have that level of will.
It would take a lot of time to make it happen. Yeah.
I was going to say, Nate, that's like saying I can make it work on macOS with a lot of will. I can make it work, but it's going to be painful the entire time.
Yes, exactly.
But you know what else is also painful? Finding the right hardware combinations of things when we build PCs.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Especially when you're dealing with a kid who wants to build his first computer.
Yes. So we talked about it a little bit before the show started. And I have my oldest son. He is a great kid. He's very responsible. I really don't have to worry about him very much. Well, sometimes I do. But that aside, he wants to build a PC. And I was all excited. I'm like, this is a great opportunity. I've done some things sort of with him in that, you know, when I built my server, he was part of it a little bit and saw the process. And so I thought he had gotten the bug after we kind of rearranged his room. He has his gaming stuff up there. I set up a dock station for his laptop, and he says he wants to have more of a gaming PC. So I said, yeah, we can build one. And I went through PC Part Picker, and he's not really like he's not as excited like as I thought he would be as I'm going through this. Going through PC Part Picker, showing him, like, you know, I already have this part here and this part here, so all we need, you know, these things. And so instead of spending, you know, $600 on this, it'd be like, you know, 100 and something, 150, 180, something like that.
Nice, yeah.
And so we could do it for your birthday. It's coming up in a couple of months, which that might be the hint as to. Anyway, and he's like, no, it's not what I want at all. I said, but you want to build a PC. I'm really confused. And he says, no, I want to build a framework desktop. I'm like, but that's a laptop. He says, no. He said, and then he tells me, you know, I saw the Cooler Master case. He said, so I want to build a gaming PC out of a framework laptop. And yeah, that's possible. And so he built a spreadsheet. He showed me the numbers and everything else. And he says, then I could save up money and turn it into a laptop later on. And I'm sort of thinking, well, I'm finding a lot of flaws in his logic, because that's not how you build a PC. You build a PC with, you know, an ATX case and a box, you know, an ATX box. You know, I got some old beige garbage over here that we can use and make a really cool sleeper. Not interested at all. He wants to build a framework PC because he wants it to be portable. And so I kind of get it, but am I just not understanding? Is there a generational gap here thing that's causing me to just completely not understand what he's trying to go for here? I mean, Matt, what am I missing?
I have gone a 180 from that direction of how I view PCs now. So for those that don't know, I actually bought a pre-built mini PC that just happened to have a dedicated GPU. It's all laptop parts, essentially. I can upgrade the RAM, the SSD, and all that stuff. Whatever. That's cool. I love that. But it depends on the person.
Really?
So, like, for me, it's a space thing. So, like, I don't know if, like, we're going back to kind of that old Apple adage of where they were always trying to make things thinner and thinner and thinner and lighter and smaller and all that stuff. If we're going back kind of to that, when we look at how we view PCs, so with something like a framework, it's a little different because, yes, it uses laptop parts, but the mentality to a framework in general is very much more in the PC desktop space.
And being able to replace the parts and pick your parts.
So it's very much, I would say it depends on what people are looking for, honestly. So for me, like a minis form, which is what I picked up, worked what I needed for. Mine was a space constraint. That was the reason. It can be a generational thing because, you know, they're used to, you know, things like this being their computer. So like having the ability to always have stuff on the go with them is, I think, a very key driving factor for a lot of like the kids kind of thinking mentality with it. Look at the success of things like the Switch. It's not powerful by any means. You can still game. At least for games that are actually built on it. So it's one of those things where it's like, there is, I think, there's always been this way, though. It doesn't matter how you look at it. We don't see it the same way as our elders do, and our elders never kind of understood our way of doing it, especially if you're in that weird, like, I remember analog, but I grew up digital, you know, kind of space that some of us sit in. So it's interesting to see, and I think that's kind of their mentality now, where that convert, ironically, as much as people want to kind of sometimes poo-poo on Mark Shuttleworth about, you know, his idea of like convergence and all that stuff, he actually was well ahead of the curve, I think. And I think that's kind of what we're getting at with a lot of these kind of other devices, where they want to have that portability with them. So having, like, Nate, how big is the framework case? Probably gay big.
It's tiny.
It's not big at all. I mean,
yeah. So it 12 literally inches. Throw that in a bag and find a monitor and a wireless keyboard. And most of the time, you don't even need a wireless keyboard. Just use your phone for most of that, because you can use like KDE Connect or whatever. So you don't need the mouse and keyboard. So literally, what's holding you back other than the need for a monitor?
Yeah, and if you're anything like my co-mentor's daughter, she was living in Boston and still going to school. She was getting her master's in cybersecurity. And at Worlds last year, she built a small PC that she takes with her as her carry-on luggage. So it just goes on the seat in front of her. And she was, so she was able to take it on the plane, and she did all of her schoolwork using the TV in the, of the living room in the house we rented to get everything done.
That's so crazy.
It was completely portable for her. And as part of, you know, her other carry-on luggage, she just had a wireless keyboard and yeah, able to get all of her schoolwork done very portably. So I can understand kind of where Matt's going with on the portability of this and maybe wanting that framework laptop, but knowing it's not in the budget and building up to it is the way that he gets that goal. It's kind of like buying the crappy car, knowing that you're saving more money. So you're going to sell this one and you're going to take the money you're saving plus what you sell it for and then buy a little bit nicer car and slowly build that up. Kind of doing that in the computer fashion, like that does make sense if I'm looking at it this way. But at the same time, the first time you said that, I was like, holy crap, I love my monster PC over here. I absolutely love it. I've got, I think, 4 or 5 drives in it, plus all the hardware. It's pretty easy to work in because it's such a large case. But as we were talking about this, the frameworks and the laptops, I was realizing that I could build a mini PC or turn this one into a mini PC for way cheaper than I can get a laptop that has all the things that I need to have it be a working editing system. And so while it's not starting with a framework motherboard, that portability is becoming more important even to curmudgeon-y me.
And that's interesting. It's like another way of looking at the portability aspect of it in a, because you need a workstation and you want a portable workstation. And so now you're looking for ways of making a workstation, not a laptop, but a workstation portable. And so, I mean, there are a lot of really cool small form factor, actually not small form factor, but a smaller form factor, like the cases. ITX cases that you can still put a dedicated GPU in there and the way it, it's got the RGB vomit that you like. Or maybe that I'd like you to have. And then it has all these things and you can do that and you can build it for pretty cheap. And then they have these, a lot of these portable monitors now are pretty cool. There's one I shared with you, that Flipgo from JSOX, which thanks Matt for JSOX. Anyway, so there's like all these different little options out there for a portable, to build a portable system that actually might be way better in the long run.
And I think the advantage that your son has with the framework motherboard is less overall heat. It's one of my concerns with building a smaller form factor workstation is I have a ton of fans in this one to help keep overall temperatures down. I have a monster CPU cooler on this thing. And so not only do I want it to be portable, but at the same time, I don't want to damage the hardware because I'm not able to keep those components in that threshold range that I want, or not necessarily damage them, but lessen the overall lifespan that they have. So for him, that framework motherboard, I think it might be a little bit easier to cool than, say, an ITX plus adding a full-fledged dedicated GPU on top of that. They do put off quite a bit of heat. My computer's been on most of the day and it's getting pretty warm in here. If you watch the video version of the last episode of Linux Out Loud, you can see the reddening of my cheeks as we go on. And it's because the temperature is building in this room as my desktop is on and everything's closed up and the lighting's going. So heat's an issue. You're muted.
So you're reaching thermal saturation.
Thermal saturation. Yes, absolutely. Which, to be fair, doesn't take too much for me. Yesterday, it's what triggered the migraine, so we didn't do the show. Is I'd been working out in the garage where it was much cooler in the garage. It was leg day, so totally busting my butt. And I walk in the house and my youngest son had potatoes in the oven for baked potatoes. And I went through that massive like temperature change plus already being hot and it being hot in here. And I was standing there and I'm like, oh no, I'm nauseous. And like threw kids out of the bathroom. But it was that the heat that was an issue for me. And I don't want to put my PC through that either.
So when Wendy, so this is my recommendation. If you want to go that route, you can look at, now I don't know how they are on Linux, so take it with a grain of salt. There is a $99 Intel Arc low profile GPU dedicated with 6 gigs of VRAM.
My biggest concern with that is, and I've heard great things from Jill, because she has an Intel Arc. My biggest concern with that is how well does it work with DaVinci? That's the make it or break
it. Is Jill using DaVinci is my question.
No.
What is she using? Lightworks or
Kid Live? She doesn't edit video. So she's been able to use it for Blender. I think she's done some animation and stuff with it. It plays all of her games really well. But I don't think she's actually used it for video editing. Because I edit DL, and I know she's on another podcast. I can't remember. Is it the Mint Gaming one? I know she's on another one that definitely deals with more gaming. I think somebody else edits that one, and I think it might be audio only.
I'll have to send you some links to what people are showing for the DaVinci Resolve results.
That would be absolutely awesome, because if it did work well with DaVinci Resolve, because I'm already running into issues with my AMD graphics card not being able to get some of the codec out of it, even though I have the studio version of DaVinci Resolve. If I had an NVIDIA graphics card, then I would be able to have access to those codecs and some other things. So I was already on the lookout for potentially a different graphics card to go overall into this system. And then what do I do? Do I take this system and just make it a smaller system, which then I then pack and leave with? Or do I build a completely new system? Overall, the nicer route financially would be just to turn this system into a mini system.
Box.
The downside of that is if I leave, then Magneto is stuck with just the living room system because I don't have a monitor on the kitchen system right now. I still hijacked that one. And I do need to get more monitors anyway so that can be up and running and the living room system can be off the TV and on his own monitor. I need monitors too. I actually have some in a cart. I just haven't been able to pull the trigger on those.
I think me and Nate can give you a suggestion on what to replace if you go the mini route.
No.
Magneto?
No. I know what you're going to say, and the answer is no. I'm not buying a Steam Deck.
Oh, there I thought you were going to say Atari VCS.
No.
The Steam Deck is actually a really good option. It really would be. And then when you're done editing, you just hold it in your hand. You can be like, you know.
Wendy, it's Arch.
It's
$400
system.
And yeah, 16 gigs of RAM.
The thing is, 16 gigs of RAM is not enough to edit with. Plain and simple, it's not enough for what I'm doing.
I'm saying for Magneto.
Oh, for Magneto, yes, Magneto, it's plenty. Yes. Though I don't know that he would necessarily love a handheld gaming system. He does like to sit down at the computer and have the larger screen.
That's what the dock's for.
That's what the dock's for.
Just buy him a USB-C dock. They're on like $30. They're stupid cheap.
They are.
You are bound and determined to have me buy a Steam Deck.
With an NVMe slot in it too. You can actually expand the storage with this dock.
Here's the thing. At this point, if I ever did, I would probably pull a Matt where the way he ended up playing Among Us when he finally did was not tell anybody about it
until the very last minute.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
Uh-huh. That's fair.
If you do that, here's the thing though. If you buy it, Matt and I still win. So it doesn't matter if you don't tell us or not.
I guess that's true.
Even if it's a even if it's a victory that we can't even taste, we still win.
Oh, we will still know about it at the end of the day.
Even if we don't know about it, it's still a win.
To be fair, I actually don't think I could keep hardware secrets from you guys, so that there's that. Yeah.
Yeah, but. Pretty much.
But, so, I guess my question is, what are you guys going to do for your PC? How do you determine whether or not you guys, is mobility more important? Is big Berber power, all that more important? Or is it some type of combination in between? Let us know, you know, comment in the comments, you know, all that fun stuff. And let's have a discussion about it, because you can probably tell that both me and Nate are wrong all the time. And, well, no one argues with Wendy, so, you know, it's whatever.
Oh, whatever. You do argue with me, just typically not.
No. I'm talking to listeners. They don't argue with you. They argue about us.
Oh, no, that is absolutely not true. After we had the flood in our house, whatever, like almost 2 years ago, after we had the flood, I guess they didn't argue with me. They called me a horrible parent because our house flooded. Yeah, so I do occasionally get some of those comments, but that's just part of being in the public eye in general, right? I mean, you're gonna get some of those people. And I guess that one sticks out the most, even though it's been like 2 years since I've had a memorable one that sticks out the most, because it was the most what?
Now it's your turn to toss in your two cents on today's topics. Hit the Discord forums, drop us a line under this video, or on the contact form by visiting tuxdigital.com/contact. If you'd like to hang out with us on our preferred social media, see the links at the bottom of the show description. You can find other great shows like Fit and Fuel, Destination Linux, and Linux Saloon, and more at tuxdigital.com. Show off your love for your favorite podcasts and shows by visiting the Tux Digital merch store. Grab yourself some awesome swag like the GamerCentric app, Pause My Game to Be Here shirt, or hashtag Team Wendy with some Sinister Wendy swag. She's evil. Pure
evil. I'm not evil, but I think one of the things that Michael needs to add to the new store is the almost unhealthy obsession. Like, we need an almost unhealthy obsession t-shirt. And the thing is, I would actually make them if I had a DTF printer, because that way I could print on like whatever fabric I wanted to. So I am all for petitioning Michael for an almost unhealthy obsession t-shirt as well. Yes.
That's when you flip it around to the back and it says, no, wait, it's unhealthy.
That's how it would fit our show. That's totally how it would fit our show.
Like, Matt has an almost unhealthy obsession with the Steam Deck. I have an almost unhealthy obsession with OpenSUSE, potentially framework.
I'd say that mine might be robotics. Yeah.
3D printing.
3D printing. Well, 3D printing mostly because of robots.
Yes, though I am learning CAD right along with her. And I have to say, it's one of those things that once you start, you just can't stop.
Anyways. As always, we thank you for joining us, and we'll be back next time with another awesome episode of Linux Out Loud. Until then, keep the banner friendly, the conversation, well, somewhat on topic, and have fun doing it.